The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Larissa Biggers for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is poetry. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the Pushcart Book of Poetry, the best poems from 30 years of the Pushcart Prize. From the start of the series in 1976, the editors of the Pushcart Prize have honored all sorts of poetry, from the traditional to the experimental, both by known and unknown poets. More than 1,000 poets have appeared, selected by new poetry editors for each edition. The first poem I'll read from this collection is called The End of Science Fiction by Lisa Muller. This is not fantasy. This is our life. We are the characters who have invaded the room, the moon, who cannot stop their computers. We are the gods who can unmake the world in 7 days. Both hands are stopped at noon. We are beginning to live forever in lightweight aluminum bodies with numbers stamped on our backs. We dial our words like Muzak. We hear each other through water. The genre is dead. Invent something new. Invent a man and a woman naked in a garden. Invent a child that will save the world, a man who carries his father out of a burning city. Invent a spool of thread that leads a hero to safety. Invent an island on which he abandons the woman who saved his life, with no loss of sleep over the betrayal. Invent us as we were, before our bodies glittered and we stopped bleeding. Invent a shepherd who kills a giant, a girl who grows into a tree, a woman who refuses to turn her back on the past and is changed to salt, a boy who steals his brother's birthright and becomes head of a nation. Invent real tears, hard love, slow-spoken ancient worlds, difficult as a child's first step across a room. The next poem is called The Ritual of Memories by Tess Gallagher. The Ritual of Memories. When your widow had left the graveside and you were most alone, I went to you in that future you can't remember yet. I brought a basin of clear water where no tear had fallen, water gathered like grapes a drop at a time from the leaves of a willow. I brought oils. I brought a clean white gown. Come out, I said, and you came up, like a man pulling himself out of a river with so many names there was no word left for it but earth. Now, I said, I'm ready. These eyes that have not left your face since the day we met, wash these eyes. Remember, it was a country road above the sea and I was passing from the house of a friend. Look into these eyes where we met. I saw your mind go back through the years, searching for that day and finding it. You washed my eyes with the pure water so that I vanished from that road, and you passed a lifetime, and I was not there. So you washed every part of me where any look or touch had passed between us. Remember, I said, when you came to the feet, it was the night before you had asked the girl of your village to marry. I was a strange one. I was the one with a gypsy look. Remember how you stroke these feet. When the lips and the hands had been treated likewise in the pit of the throat, where one thoughtless kiss had fallen, you rubbed in the sweet oil, and I glistened like a new-made thing, not merely human, but out of the world gone past being human. The hair, I said, you've forgotten the hair. Don't you know it remembers? Don't you know it keeps everything? Listen. There's your voice, and in it the liar's charm that caught me. You listened. You heard your voice, and a look of such sadness passed over your dead face that I wanted to touch you. Who could have known I would be so held? Not you and your boyish cunning, not me and my traveler's clothes. It's finished. Put the gown on my shoulders. It's no life in the shadow of another's joys. Let me go freely now. One life I have lived for you, this one is mine. Next, I'll read I Remember Galileo by Gerald Stern. I remember Galileo, describing the mind as a piece of paper blown around by the wind, and I love the sight of it sticking to a tree or jumping into the back of a seat of a car. And for years, I watched paper leap through my cities. But yesterday, I saw the mind was a squirrel caught crossing Route 80 between the wheels of a giant truck, dancing back and forth like a thin leaf or a frightened string, for only 2 seconds living on the white concrete before he got away, his life shortened by all that terror, his head jerking, his yellow teeth ground down to dust. It was the speed of the squirrel and his lowness to the ground, his great purpose and the alertness of his dancing that showed me the difference between him and paper. Paper will do in theory when there's time to sit back in a metal chair and study shadows. But for this life, I need a squirrel, his clawed feet spread, his whole soul quivering, the hot wind rushing through his hair, the loud noise shaking him from head to tail. Oh, philosophical mind! Oh, mind of paper! I need a squirrel, finishing his wild dash across the highway, rushing up his greened, ungoverned hillside. The next poem is called Waiting in Line by William Stafford. Waiting in Line. You, the very old, I've come to the edge of your country and looked across. How your eyes warily look into mine when we pass, how you hesitate when we approach a door. Sometimes I understand how steep your hills are and your way of seeing the madness around you, the careless waste of the calendar, the rush of the people on buses. I have studied how you carry packages, balancing them better, giving them attention. I've glimpsed from within the gray-eyed look of those who push, and occasionally even I can achieve your beautiful, bleak perspective on the loud and attentive shoving bores jostling past you toward their doom. With you, from the pavement, I have watched the nation of the young, like jungle birds that scream as they pass or gyrate on playgrounds, their frenzied bodies jittering with the disease of youth. Knowledge can cure them, but not all at once. It will take time. There have been evenings when the light has turned everything silver, and like you, I have stopped at a corner and suddenly staggered with the grace of it all. To have inherited all this, or even the bereavement of it, and finally be cheated, the chance to stand on a corner and tell it goodbye. Every day, every evening, every abject step or stumble has become heroic. You others, we, the very old, have a country. A passport costs everything there is. The next poem is called For Elizabeth Bishop by Sandra McPherson. For Elizabeth Bishop. The child I left your class to have, later, had a habit of sleeping with her arms around a globe she'd unscrewed, dropped, and dented. I always felt she could possess it, the pink countries and the mauve, and the ocean, which got to keep its blue. Coming from the southern hemisphere to teach, which you never had to do, you took a bare-walled room alone, its northern windowscapes as gray as walls. To decorate, you'd only brought a black Madonna. I thought you must have skipped summer that year, southern winter, southern spring, then north for winter, over again. Still, it pleased you to take credit for introducing us, and later to bring our daughter a small flip book of partners dancing, and a ring with a secret whistle. All are broken now, like her globe, but she remembers them, as I recall the black Madonna, facing you across the room, so that, in a way, you had the dark, fertile life you were always giving gifts to. Your smaller admirer off to school, I take the globe and roll it away. Where on it now is someone like you? The next poem is called I Sing the Body Electric by Philip Levine. I Sing the Body Electric. People sit numbly at the counter, waiting for breakfast or service. Today, it's Hartford, Connecticut, more than 25 years after the last death of Wallace Stevens. I've come in out of the cold and wind of a Sunday morning in early March, and I seem to be crying, but I'm only freezing and unpeeled. The waitress brings me hot tea in a cracked cup, and soon it's all over my paper, and so she refills it. I read slowly in the New York Times that poems are dying in Iowa, Missoula, on the outskirts of Reno, and the shopping galleries of Houston. We should all go to the grave of the unknown poet while the rain streaks our notebooks, or stand for hours on the freezing winds of the lost books of our fathers, or at least until we can no longer hold our pencils. Men keep coming in and out, and two of them recall the great dirty fights between Willie Pep and Sandy Sadler, between Little White Perfection and Death in Red Plaid Trunks. I want to tell them I saw the last fight. I rode out to Yankee Stadium with two deserters from the French Army of Indochina and back with a drunken priest, and both ways the whole train smelled of piss and vomit, but no one would believe me. Those are the true legends, but are left to die. In my black raincoat, I go back out into the gray morning and dare the cars on North Indemnity Boulevard to hit me, but no one wants trouble at this hour. I've crossed a continent to bring these citizens the poems of the snowy mountains on the forges of hopelessness to the survivors of war they never heard of and won't believe. Nothing is alive in this tunnel of winds of the end of winter except the last raging of winter, the cats peering smugly from the homes of strangers, and the great stunned sky slowly settling like a dark cloud lined only with smaller dark clouds. The next poem is called Moles by Mary Oliver. Moles. Under the leaves, under the first loose levels of earth, they're there, quick as beetles, blind as bats, shy as hares, but seen less than these, traveling among the pale girders of apple root, rock shelf, nest of insects, and black pastures of bulbs, peppery and packed full of the sweetest food, spring flowers. Field after field, you can see the traceries of their long, lonely walks. Then the reins blur, even the frail hint of them, so excitable, so plush, so willing to continue, generation after generation, accomplishing nothing but their brief physical lives, pushing and shoving with their stubborn muzzles against the whole earth, finding it delicious. This poem is called The Trickle-Down Theory of Happiness by Philip Appleman. The Trickle-Down Theory of Happiness. It starts in the penthouses, drizzling at first, then a pelting allegro, falling nowhere except the high places. And Dick and Jane pull on bikinis and go boogieing through the azaleas, and Daddy, ecstatic, comes running with pots and pans, glasses and basins, and tries to keep all of it up here. But it's no use. It's too much. It keeps coming, and it pours over the edges, down limestone to the buckets and pails on the ground floor, where delirious citizens catch it, and bucket brigades keep it moving inside until bathtubs are brim full. But still, it keeps coming. The shower of silver in alleys and gutters, all pouring downhill to the sleazy red brick, and the barefoot people who romp in it, squishing, but never take thought for tomorrow, all spinning in a pleasure they catch for a moment, so that when somebody turns off the spigot and the sky goes dry as a prairie, then Daddy looks down from the penthouse, down to the streets, to the gutters, and his heart goes out to his neighbors, to all the folks thirsty for laughter, and he prays in his boundless compassion on behalf of the world and its people. He demands of the sky, "Give me more." This poem is called A Vacant Lot by Gibbons Rourke. A Vacant Lot. One night, where there is nothing now but air, I paused with one hand on the banister and listened to a film aficionado's careless laughter sentence poetry to death. It's 20 gone years and a few poems later, the house demolished, the film man vanished, the friend who introduced us dead. I side with one old master who loves to tell his film buff friends that film is like an art form, and yet my eyes keep panning up the empty air above the rubble as if I could run the film back far enough. I might still start for home down the darkened street from the newsstand and turn a corner to the house still standing. A faint light showing in an upstairs window. Is someone reading late? Or is it the night our newborn lies burning up with fever, and all the doctor can say is plunge her in cold water, wrap her up and hold her, strip her down, and plunge her in again until it breaks, and she is weak but cooling. Is it the night they call about my father, and I lay the mismatched funeral suit in the back seat with the cigarettes and whiskey, and drive off, knowing nothing but death and south? Somewhere a tree limb scrapes at a gutter. The wind blows. Late trucks rattle the windows. Never you mind, I say out loud to the girls. Away at school, there's nothing there to hurt you. The sky is thickening over a vacant lot. And when I leave, there's a hard rain drumming with the sound of someone up in small hours. Thirsty, his palms still warm from a sick child's forehead, running the spigot in the kitchen, full force, until the water's cold enough to drink. This next set of poems is from an online publication or a website called Redactions. It's REDACTIONS, Poetry and Poetics. And these are all Pushcart-nominated poems. The first one I'll read is called When I Try to Write an Elegy by Janine Hall Gailey. When I try to write an elegy, I try to make it pastoral, you know, bunnies and deer and flowers. It's not as if they're never out of the picture when things go wrong. There's always a fox crouching under a lunar eclipse on the drive to the hospital, or a bluebird singing above your house as you lose consciousness. Even now, I'm considering chemo. The cherry trees are shedding blossoms. Such a great metaphor for loss, those damn petals all over the blacktop. I wish I could have it all back. The people I've lost, the nights, the years I spent in the hospital, the memories, and lately my reflexes. The ability to walk without a cane. The ability to wrap up a math problem or recite a poem without difficulty. I've said before, nature is treacherous. Is there anything more treacherous than the promise of cottony rabbits waiting to eat my dahlias when I turn my back, the deer tearing at the camellias? Is there anything worse than a moon that turns dark as blood just as you are learning to rely on its silver light for salvation? The next poem is called When It Comes Down to It by Melody Wiltson. When it comes down to it, few things matter so much in life as a really good spoon. A silver skin that slides along the thumb, no pits, no burrs. It bears the heft of an important question. A girl, with any grace at all, can balance it on the fleshy pad of her first finger. A teaspoon is always superior to a soup spoon, even for soup, so long as the bowl is generous. The bevel should be blunt enough to impose on a reluctant baby without insult, the well deep enough to convey a slip of lukewarm consommé. Even now, sudsy spoons clatter against porcelain, conundrum of convex and concave. I hold one under the faucet, narrow the stream to a thread, let the pool swell until it rises above the tip, its curved edge a horizon that cannot hold. I break it with my lips, sip. The tang of metal washes over me, benediction of July, the garden hose upright in my sister's hands, me dancing on hot concrete, crying, my turn, my turn. The next poem is called Scar by Steve Musk. Scar. Run your fingers along the pink ridge and remember what was removed. A canary from the coal mine, a loaf of bread, scuffed shoe, a field of daffodils, Joey Ramone's leather jacket, the view from the hill. What was taken whole or in pieces, tested, found benign, cut out, cauterized, having sat in the nest against your optical nerve. Show me the smiling line, the exclamation, the stretched seam, silken with age, a beautiful wreck of gnarled whorls. Give me the purple, the new, the opened belly closed against the storm. Give me your body remade, healed, grown over and vined, the garden of you. Give me the broken vase, what the years have stretched onto a long and pearlescent river. Give me the trip over the handlebars, the air suddenly, a form of water. This poem is called Heartland by Kelly Russell Agadon. Heartland. You want me to have faith, but there's a dog under your porch, a stray dog, and he's dying. You tell me the names of gods I do not recognize, so I can blame them for my insomnia, so you can blame them for the dog who appeared with a limp and trembled, who stumbled deep beneath your deck to hide away. I'm leaving for somewhere, because I've never been to Walla Walla, and you are praying for good news, but the dog is a simple breath now, next to the food and water you left, near the stair, next to the leap of cliff you live by. The topic is not the overhang, how far we have to fall, but closer. How do we live when there's so much dying? The tomatoes are no longer growing in the garden. Instead, their leaves are black. There was a surprise cremation of an evergreen wrapped with ivy by a man with an axe, and everyone knows someone who is living with, / dying from cancer, depending on your optimistic wording. I am pouring myself a gravestone of iced tea and going on a slow ride down a long highway because everyone is trying to keep this dog alive, and what I can't take is another life I couldn't save. And honestly, I've never seen the heartland or been to Walla Walla, where the onions are sweet and you can drive by farm after farm not knowing what skeletons are buried deep within their fields. This poem is called Surgery by Donald Illick. Surgery. I wear my scrubs to the living room. I'm here to reconnect two arteries, a passage between husband and wife. It will take an unknown amount of time. Instruments lay on the table. Kind words, honesty, forgiveness. I open her mouth and she says, "Why aren't things the way they were?" A tap on the face and he says, "I thought everything was all right with us." Between their flow of words, I cut into the red pulse of language through, "Everything she does hurts me," to, "I don't understand what he's thinking." When I discover the argument's heart beating roughly under the skin, I know what I must do to help them. I let each of them touch the organ. If they decide to let it fall, the burst of a balloon, it's over. If they bring it to their mouths, there is life. Still, life. This poem is called Language Acquisition by Tom Caraway. Language Acquisition. I forget the names of things, what they stand for. Mountain is butte. River is river, but not. Tree is drowned. Cold, not bad. Unspeakable, cold. Emma put sounds together, names her world with syllables. Deep in night she wakes, forms sounds, and comes to me to make them. One arm asleep, I pull her into bed, lay her between her mother and me. I whisper, "Forest," and she laughs. I whisper, "Elevation," and she says, "Gula." I whisper, "Home," and she whispers, "Home." Her head rests in the bend of my arm, small breath warm against my skin as she blinks her way back to sleep. I don't know what woke her. We'll never know the dreams of her unformed language, but when she sleeps here, dreams until morning in the shelter of her parents' bodies, she makes no noise at all. This poem is called Letter to an Inmate in Solitary Confinement by Keechee Coopers. Letter to an Inmate in Solitary Confinement. We all want to know our worth, the value of a tin can, a newspaper in the rain. You must remember the rain, its teeth, its tongue. Think of what it's been made into, how it's been transformed, solid, liquid, gone. Sometimes I put my fingers in my mouth and chew on what they've done. Do you ever do that? Do you count the bricks? That's what we do on the outside, too. We make them, and then we count them. I read in a paper they're closing down the mill, talking about condos, selling it off in auction machine by tired machine. But killing something can take a long time. I cut down a tree, and it took all day. First an axe, then a saw, then dragging up the hill like a dead body, all heavy and already forgotten. I used some beautiful old blade to strip off the bark and curls. It smelled like a new house, except I wasn't building a house. I left it out in the field for a year of rain. Try not to ask yourself what this waiting means or why you're held inside it. This poem is called She Justifies Running Away by Janine Hall Gailey. She justifies running away. I just wanted to be somewhere. I could smell lemon trees in April, where the sea wind wasn't quite as cold. You know, this damp grows in my lungs like a plague, and the sky a bit less weepy. I missed my land of pomegranates and figs, of ripe cheese and blood orange, the tart black taste of volcanic soil. It wasn't you, sweet prince, or our tiny castle, the dust mounting in closets, or the crying wounded mouths of children. It was sunlight that burned my memory. It was my lips that craved a sweeter fruit. It was the citrus blossoms in spring, the twisted cypresses, the warm salt air. It was the white frolicking goats in me that called. I will shut myself open to the blue, hot world. This poem is called Bunny Sweatshirt by Denise Duhamel. Bunny Sweatshirt. I just moved to the East Village to become a poet when my cousin, the artist, sent me a gray sweatshirt on which she'd painted a bunny, with those kinds of paints that don't wash off. The sweatshirt was a thick cotton, which I liked, but the bunny was a pale pink with lots of detailing. Her note read, "Enjoy your first real apartment. I remember you liked bunnies as a kid." I was broke. I really needed clothes, but I lived in the East Village, for Christ's sake. It was 1985, and I couldn't wear that bunny sweatshirt, even with any kind of irony. I tried to peel the bunny off with my fingernails, then with a steak knife, but I was ruining the cotton, which was starting to come off in clumps. I turned the sweatshirt inside out, but the bunny bled through the nubs, and now he was just facing left instead of right. I took the sweatshirt to the laundromat and washed it on the hottest setting, but that persistent bunny lived without ever fading. So I went to the craft section of Lambston's and bought my own fabric paint, one tube of black, and slashed away most of the bunny. I think I left one of its eyes. My mother called to say, "Did you get the sweatshirt? Wasn't it beautiful?" She reminded me to send a thank you note. My cousin was selling her sweatshirts on consignment at the mall, her fabric paint signature right under each bunny, turtle, koala, kitty cat, kangaroo. My family was proud to have a real artist in the family. We've run out of time for today's episode of poetry. Again, the sources for today's podcast were from the Pushcart Book of Poetry, the best poems from 3 decades of the Pushcart Prize, published in 2006, and the website Redactions, Poetry and Poetics, Pushcart nominated.